Welcome to the S2 Cognition Podcast. S2 is the official cognitive evaluation in sports, from youth to pro, where athletes and coaches build to win.
Welcome to the S2 Cognition Podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Hunter, and today Paul and I are joined by LSU's Director of Pitching Development, Jamie Tutko. He discusses the relationship between on-field hitting performance and S2 testing metrics. He breaks down key categories such as perception speed, trajectory estimation, timing control, and impulse control, explaining how they correlate with on-field player performance. The discussion emphasizes the importance of understanding these metrics for player development and improving hitting strategies. In this conversation, we also delve into the intricacies of baseball performance metrics, player development strategies, and the importance of creating a supportive team environment. For those that are new here, welcome. We're excited to have you today. And those that are returning listeners, we always appreciate your support. To help us continue our growth, we ask that you subscribe, rate, and review the show. Thanks again to Jamie for taking time to join us. Hope you guys are enjoying, especially since baseball season is underway. Thanks again. We've got LSU baseball pitching director here, Jamie Tutko. Jamie, what's going on, man? Appreciate you jumping on.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it.
So what relationships, I just want to jump right in here as we move through the pod. What relationships are you seeing in terms of on-field hitting performance and some of the S2 stuff that you guys have been doing for a few years now?
Yeah, so, you know, we've been doing, I believe we've been having you guys come and test our team every year since 2021. So we're going on like 4 or 5 years now. So, you know, been able to get a good not only a good data set in terms of the production on the field, right, and results, but also to have quite a few different guys be tested, pitching, hitting, two-way guys. So when it comes to, you know, some of the direct correlations, right, I try to break it up on the hitting side into four of the main categories. The four that we really, really look at are the perception speed, the trajectory estimation, your timing control, and your impulse control. And on just a big level, pretty much those four are there's direct correlations to on-field performance, and it is unbelievable. So, you know, before the fall of this year, I don't have any of those stats included, but, you know, I go back to the last 4 years looking at just the overall scores and, you know, the perception, trajectory, timing, and impulse obviously go into that. But if you just look at the entire overall score, I like to break it up and go 50 or lower or 50 or higher. And with over 10,000 at bats, you know, when you break down the statistics, if the guys that have scored over 50 or higher as your overall score have a career, this is with 8,800 at bats, you have a career 305 hitter with a 409 on base and a 539 slugging percentage. If you take that into the guys that are 50 or lower overall score, it's a 40 point difference in batting average. So it goes down to a 265 batting average, a 369 on base percentage, and a 432 slugging percentage. And you talk about the strikeouts to walks and hit by pitch, you're looking at like 1.2 strikeouts for every walk or hit by pitch in the 50 or higher. And then with the 50 or lower, it's like 1.45 strikeouts to every walk or hit by pitch. And that's with over 2,800 at-bats on that one. So you're talking about a total of 11,000 at-bats. So it's a pretty big sample size. So it just, you know, again, shows that the direct correlation between those categories, you know, and right, direct results on the field.
Well, Jamie, there is a lot there. That, man, you came packing heat. That's like a Skeens fastball. I want you to break down those four categories that he's talking about, and then we'll kind of explain what he means with the overall score. But do you mind defining like the perception, trajectory, timing, impulse, what those are, how we measure them, those type of things, and then we can keep going.
Yeah. So with the perception speed, basically, it's just like how fast you can visually process the ball and like the and how fast it's coming in with the angles. Obviously, you know, hitting a round ball with a round bat is extremely hard, especially when you got guys throwing, you know, upwards of 95 miles an hour on a daily basis. So from a perception speed standpoint, if you know the you know, we could break down the science, obviously, you know, the time that you have to react to hit a baseball, to basically tell your brain yes, is so minuscule. So anything from a perception speed, if we're able to see it even a millisecond earlier and make a decision that much earlier, you know, it's just going to make hitting, you know, hitting's not easy, but it's going to help the hitting side of things, right? So from a perception speed standpoint, you know, that's probably the most important because, you know, if you're not really processing the speed and the angles at which the ball is coming in, you know, it's extremely, you almost have no chance really, you know, to be able to hit a round ball again with round ball with a round bat.
Yeah, Paul, we call that what pitch is coming, right? That's what that one is.
Right. So, perception speed is about identifying the spin and the speed of a pitch. So it's how fast your brain unpacks the data, right? And so exactly what you just said, you know, think about hitting that round ball with a round bat and you're having to process this, and any milliseconds gained is a huge deal because hitting 95, it takes 380 milliseconds to hit 95. At 150 of that's the swing itself. So you're looking at 230 milliseconds to process all this data. And that's extremely difficult because you have guys that you see throwing faster than 95.
Without a doubt. And see, I knew that Philly could answer it a lot more articulate than I could when it comes to the amount of milliseconds you got. Absolutely. And again, I think one of the biggest jumps that these kids make, especially when they come in from high school or even some of the transfer portal guys that are not seeing, you know, the velocity that you see in the SEC on a daily basis is, you know, the perception speed is so big. And it's, you know, some of these guys on the high school setting have gone through these showcases and, you know, in these showcases, they'll see guys that are running it up there at 90, 94, 95, right? But it's not an everyday thing like they do when, as soon as they step foot on campus here. I mean, every single scrimmage, these guys are facing guys that are throwing again, 94 to 100, right? And, yep. And so the perception speed even is even more important.
It's interesting too, because perception speed, if you don't score very well in perception speed, you may not see it expressed that much in high school. But then when you get to college, it's going to get expressed more because guys tunnel pitches, guys throw harder, they cut down the amount of time that you have to react and process the pitch. So, I mean, perception speed may not be expressed in a negative way in high school because it's not getting challenged by velocity and tunneling and pitches.
Correct. And then the tunnel piece, that's when the trajectory estimation kind of comes in on top of that perception speed. You know, it's one thing to be able to recognize and see it early enough to make the decision to swing. But if your trajectory estimation is off and you don't know where that ball is in space, right? You have no chance. Again, it's just cutting your chances of hitting a baseball. 'Cause like we've said, hitting a baseball is extremely hard.
Yeah, and that's really frustrating because as a player, when you've identified and recognized the pitch that you want and you get it and your angles are off and you foul it off, that puts you in a pickle because you're like, dude, that was the one. And now I just fouled it off and I've got to hope that I get the next best pitch, you know, in this next. It's just so frustrating whenever you miss your pitch. And trajectory is totally one of the systems that causes that.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are two of the main four that we really look at. And again, two that we've seen direct correlation to results on the field.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I want to then dive into the next, because those are two visual processing systems that we measure. And then it's kind of that timing control, right? The when to swing decision, and then the impulse. I want Paul to kind of, let's describe this, and then Jamie, continue to go into those relationships you've talked about. But yeah, Paul, timing. Can you dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, so timing is about when your foot is down ready to swing the bat. When you're ready to pull the trigger and initiate the swing itself, that's when timing control comes into play. So on the assessment, you can see who is vulnerable catching up to a fastball after an off-speed pitch, or who's vulnerable waiting for an off-speed pitch after they saw a fastball, because you know, this system gets primed by the previous pitch. And so some people reset back to even. Some people get stuck in one direction versus the other, and it makes it a little bit harder for them to get to that particular timing of that pitch on time. And so, you know, timing is once your foot's down and you're ready to swing, when do I actually pull the trigger to initiate the swing?
Yeah, I will die on the sword saying that timing is everything when it comes to hitting. And Philly, I'm sure you can echo that, having you know, played in the big leagues, man. If you are not on time, it's impossible to hit. And so from a pitching side of things, right, what are pitchers trying to do? Ultimately, pitchers, all they're trying to do is disrupt timing. Yep. So the timing control piece is huge. And it's actually something that regardless of a score for a certain individual, for us, is something that we're working on daily with different drills that are helping our timing control. It's still something that we're continuing to work on literally on a daily basis.
That's a big thing to do simply because just because you have these systems, you still have to link them up to the tasks that you need to use them in. And clearly hitting a ball is really difficult. And so you may have this unbelievable system that controls timing, but if you're not linking it up to hitting, it's not going to really shine for you until you practice that.
Let's go into impulse control, Paul, real quickly. Chase rates have become this huge thing that everyone's talking about nowadays, where it's swinging at pitches outside the zone that usually don't end up with good results, bad swing. So dive into impulse control, and then we'll move to the next piece.
So impulse control is every pitch creates an impulse to swing. And so it's kind of the initiation of the go system, the I'm going to swing at this pitch unless I've designated a take, right? And so every pitch creates this impulse to swing. And so it's also the leading contributor for chase rates. And so, you know, and as a chase rate is identified and defined as a pitch that's outside of the strike zone that you swing at, you know, we like to talk about chasing a little bit more refined than that. You know, I like to talk about chasing as going outside of your plan. So you may be sitting middle in and get a pitch middle away and swing at it. Even though it's a strike, you went outside your plan, so you're still chasing, right? And so, but, you know, according to Major League Baseball, the definition is swinging at a ball that's outside of the strike zone. So, you know, impulse control is, like I said, one of the biggest contributors to chasing pitches.
So I don't think that I'm going to give away any secret sauce with this, but you know, one of our biggest offensive philosophies here at LSU is we do not swing at balls. So when you talk about chase, right, if you're going to swing at pitches outside of the strike zone, it's going to be really, really hard to play here at LSU. So the impulse control, like you said, with chasing and being able to identify pitches early, it is so big to our offense. And again, is something that we are working on a daily basis. And, you know, it's something that, you know, we bring our guys in constantly, you know, after scrimmages, after weekends, or maybe once or twice a month. And what we're doing when we bring these guys in is all geared around the strike zone, right? And understanding the strike zone and understanding where guys do their damage. Cause it's amazing that a lot of these guys don't necessarily know where in the strike zone they hit the ball the hardest. And that's okay. They've just always been a really C-ball hit ball, right? But the guys that have really been able to take the next step on the development side of things are the guys that have really truly understood not only the strike zone, right, but understanding where they do their damage inside the strike zone and where certain pitches against certain arms, where the pitch has to start for it to be in their go zone, right? Is it an east-west guy on the mound? Is it more of a north-south guy with carry, right? It's just, you know, all that stuff builds into it, but, you know, it's all geared around this impulse control, right? And again, I'm gonna give a little story real quick on a former player, Gavin Dugas, who's a part of our team in 2023 when we won the national championship, probably a huge part of our team. We don't win the national championship if it isn't for Dugas. And he was here for 5 years. And so I was able to see this guy grow up from, you know, a young pup at 18 years old and who didn't really know anything when it came to playing this game at a high level. And, you know, him in particular, when he really, really, truly understood where his go zone was and where he was able to really attack the ball and really do his damage, when he understood that, his gameplay went to another level. He started to walk more. He started to drive the baseball. He was always strong enough and physical enough, but he started to drive the baseball and he really started to drive up pitch counts on different guys and you know, be able to again take that next step. And it was so much to the point that I like vividly remember standing in the dugout when he was a junior in 2022 and an at bat. He flew out to center field. It was like a 5-pitch at bat. But on the second pitch of the at bat, he had a hanging breaking ball up and in his go zone that he fouled back, straight back. And he came back into the dugout and was not upset with the at bat, but was upset that he missed his pitch in the 1-0 count that he should have done his damage on. And in that moment, it was like, he's got it. He's got it. He understands now, again, where his go zone is, when he can do his damage, and where he can do his damage. And a lot of that has to deal with the impulse control piece.
It's so interesting because, you know, these kids, they're so good being just athletes, right? Yes. And I think that's this blessing and a curse as a hitter, because they can hit all these different pitches, but they can't hit them all the same. And that's what you're discussing right now, is when they start to learn the pitches that they do damage on, and even though the pitch that they are thrown may be a strike, that doesn't mean you have to swing at it, right? Because that might be a pitch that you have to swing at with two strikes, but that's not a pitch you do damage with early in the count. And when you can get a player to identify what their pitches are that they do damage on, man, that's a huge benefit in hitting.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, with me kind of with my role being a little bit more on the pitching side of things on a daily basis with our guys, I understand, you know, the pitching side of things. And I know that in the SEC last year, only 45% of pitches thrown in the SEC were inside the strike zone. You know, when you get to the big league level, you're talking about 50% of pitches. So it's 50-50 that if I just stood there, I'm going to, you know, if I took four at bats and I just went up there in four at bats in the big leagues and just stood there, there's a decent chance that I might walk in one of those four at bats.
Right.
So it's extremely enticing, right, to swing. But again, understanding that strike zone and understanding that the strike zone is like the offensive line in football, right? The games are won and lost by controlling the strike zone on the mound and in the box offensively.
No doubt. So it's interesting too, because when you have a strike zone disciplined team, and then they're not chasing pitches, that means they're pushing the pitchers back in the strike zone. That means you're going to absolutely start making them throw the pitch that you need. And then the more pitches they throw, the more mistakes they make. And now more damage you do because you're getting your pitch. I mean, that's a huge thing. And here's the other thing, like what you're talking about, how you guys work on this daily. No one really teaches people how not to swing. They teach you what to swing at and be really good at what you should swing at, but they don't teach you how not to swing at what you don't want to swing at. There's also an element to impulse control. If that's the go at it, we got to learn how to have some good breaks too, right? I mean, we have to also learn what we don't want to swing at and also practice, because if 45% were strikes, that means 55 were balls. That means I'm taking more than I'm swinging. So when I do swing, I need to be really good at it, but I also need to know what I don't need to swing at and practice not swinging at that too.
Yes. There's been numerous guys over the last couple of years that I have, just in talking to them, literally the line that I've told these guys is, your best games are when you swing less. And it's kind of a weird to these guys to hear that, because, you know, they got here because they are able to swing and do damage and hit the ball extremely hard, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of these guys get themselves out at the plate, and a lot of these guys don't understand that, like you said, Philly, you do not have to swing. Right. You do not have to swing. So if you can't hit a ball 100 miles an hour off the bat before two strikes, we don't have to swing at that.
That's right.
A strike is better than an out. We say that all the time to our guys. A strike is better than an out.
Yep, I'd rather be 0-1 than 0-for-1.
Absolutely.
Hey, Jamie, let's move into that. You talked about the overall score. So we've defined, like, right, we've looked at all of these enhanced performance and on-field production stats that link to some of these things that we evaluate. Now let's talk about that overall score, that all of these eight things that we measure combine to look at this overall score. And, man, if you're really high, it just tells us you're really flexible in your swing decisions. You bring a lot of tools and flexibility to the plate. And if you're a little lower, it just tells us you're a little more inconsistent with those swing decisions. And so I want to talk about and define that overall score and what you meant by that. So 50 is dead average, right? So if we're comparing guys to the highest level of college, the SEC players, right? The highest level of collegiate players. And as well, if we even look at, so we've done our own internal digging for some of this stuff. Jamie, it's pretty crazy. If you take the north of 30 all-stars that we've tested, their average overall score against pro baseball players is the 87th percentile. So it's not 50. The average north of 30 players, the average score is at the 87th percentile. It's almost 90% at a 99. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it absolutely is. And again, you know, I can't echo it enough. Like from this side of things, like the overall score has given us, you know, it's a direct correlation to guys that are having success on the field. And you know, just a little bit about that overall score. So I went back and looked at the starting lineup for game three of the College World Series in 23 when we won the national championship. The starting lineup had an average score of 70.1 overall. So that's nine guys in the lineup with an average score of 70.1, which is now looking back on it, now having, you know, 4 or 5 years worth of data on our guys testing, I realize now how ridiculous that
was. How special. Yeah.
How absolutely ridiculous that was. So, it was a very special team and, you know, something that, will be hard to get that same exact team again. So, absolutely. And again, that kind of goes into that overall score piece.
Yeah, it sounds like that 2019 team that you guys did across the way over there that Marucci talks about all the time, that Jack talks about all the time, that 19 team, man, that those brains were just unbelievable from the football side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had plenty of conversations with Doc over there, with Jack Marucci, and talking about that 2019 with Joe Burrow and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and, you know, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, even Thaddeus Moss. I mean, that's just to name a few on the offensive side. But, yeah, I would imagine you know, without giving it out, but I would imagine their scores were really, really high.
Yeah. Okay. So we've identified the importance of linking some of these on-field performance metrics with some of the tasks. But your job is also, right, you're in development. Paul, you were in development when you were in the big leagues and in college. We got to work to develop these players. What are some of the ways that LSU is tapping into developing these unique systems after understanding how your hitters and pitchers are wired?
Yeah. So again, you know, like I said, I'm not trying to give any secret sauce away, but you know, our entire office is built around understanding and controlling the strike zone. So it's not just that in games and scrimmages, you know, that's pretty much everything that we do has some sort of understanding the strike zone, and controlling it. So, you know, we do a lot of, the seven ball drill where, you know, you have seven balls in a sock and you have them numbered and calling out locations. I think that's been really, really, really big for a lot of our guys. And, you know, another thing that we tapped into is something that Philly had kind of mentioned earlier with teaching guys not to swing. If a ball is not a strike, or is not in your go zone or something you're working on in a round of batting practice, we get on guys if they swing at that, right? Because it's creating bad habits. We're gearing everything on putting a ball where you want it, right? Putting that pitch where you can do damage. So after we've understood and recognized where those guys can do their damage, now it's about gearing all of your training around how do I get a pitch to get to start? Where do I need a pitch to start for it to be in my go zone? And then when do I go to do it, right? So again, you know, the seven ball drill, calling out the locations. We like to do it early, try to do it as early as we can. We do a lot of things on the spin ball machine where it's, you know, guys, we could crank the velocity up. I know our players don't love it, but it's really, really good for their development. And it's not, again, it's not fun, but you know, we could crank it up. We do random at bats where it's got multiple pitches spitting out, and you know, some of the pitches that we log into it, we'll purposely make like a breaking ball down that's a ball. So, you know, we'll have a breaking ball that's up, it's a strike, and then we'll purposely have one of the random pitches that is a ball so that, you know, when they're going through an at bat, they don't just get into swing mode. Because I think that creates bad habits.
I totally agree. You know, that's such a wonderful way to train. You know, you're literally putting them in full at bats, you know, and, you know, whenever you're developing, it's going to get uncomfortable because you want that development to be way harder than who you're going to be facing, your opponent, right? And so at the end of the day, I'd much rather have my guys like frustrated with me in development and then them go out there and absolutely do tons of damage on the field and then get them excited whenever they finish off the field versus in my cage.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I'm a huge, huge believer in the variability training piece. And, you know, putting guys into, I want our guys to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Yeah. Because standing in the box inside the box with 10,000 people on a Friday night against Vanderbilt in a 2-2 game in the bottom of the eighth inning with two outs and a guy in scoring position, that's not a comfortable place to be. Let's just be completely honest. Right. So if we can get our guys to slow things down, to breathe, and to try to get as comfortable as you can being in those situations, and frankly, it's impossible to mimic that situation. Yeah. From a heartbeat standpoint, from a pressure standpoint, from just everything, it's impossible to. But if we could try to push the envelope a little bit with our training and make it a little bit more variability, where maybe we have an increased heart rate day where guys are going and swinging with an increased heart rate, or guys are swinging when after a workout when we know that they're tired, because they're going to be tired during the game in certain situations. They're going to be tired when we're playing our 73rd game in Omaha, you know? So, you know, we want that to be a situation that is not necessarily new to them. Okay. They've already done that. Yep. They've been there. I can revert back to my training and breathe and go. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if you've never done it before and this is your first time in a huge moment, you're hoping something good happens instead of relying on your training, like you just said. If you've trained it, it's not a hope. You've practiced it. You should be able to do these things.
Yes, yes. And so to take that same thought process a little bit on the pitching side of things, when I was with the Marlins, Philly, you know, Storm Davis. Storm Davis was a pitching coach for a year in New Orleans, and I was fortunate enough to be around him for an entire year. And man, whenever Stormy talked about pitching, I stopped everything I was doing. I was just a sponge, and I just listened to. I don't know if I've ever told him that, but I learned so much from just listening to that guy talk about pitching. And one of the things he talked about was, you know, he would take his spring training outings. You know, he pitched in the big leagues for 10 years, so he would take his spring training outings and he would look at the big league schedule and he would look and say, okay, we're going to be in Chicago in April, and I know that I'm going to pitch in that series. And when it's Chicago, April, it's cold. When it's cold, I don't have feel for my best pitch, which is my breaking ball. So in this outing in spring training, I'm going to go into the outing with limiting my best pitch. I'm going to try to get guys out without my best pitch, because ultimately there's going to be a day, whether it's that outing in Chicago in April or it's an outing in St. Louis in June, there's going to be a day where the guy doesn't have feel for the breaking ball. Well, now he can revert back to his training and say, okay, I've gotten guys out before when I don't have them feel for my best pitch. It's very similar from an offensive standpoint. Okay, I've seen a guy with this type of stuff, right? I've seen a guy from this arm angle, this stuff, this movement on the pitch. I've gotten to him, and this is how I've gotten to him, right? We had a guy last year, I won't say his name, but he was an offensive hitter who would, whenever there was a guy that would have run or sink, right-handed arm that would have run or sink, he would want to know, and he would take a half a step back off the plate because he knew that those guys, when that would run fastballs in and kind of chase his hand, he needed to back up so that it was easier for him to visually see the ball and be able to get the barrel to the ball. Mm-hmm. Whereas other guys, you know, he would kind of be on the plate a little bit more. And, you know, again, but it just goes back to that training, that variability, and he understood really what he did well.
That's a huge thing because, you know, as a good hitter, you want to create your pitch, because a pitcher is not going to just give it to you, right? Their job is to get you out. You know, I remember in New Orleans that same year in 16, had a player who we had runner on second base, nobody out, and could absolutely crush the ball. And they kept pounding him in, and he crushed the ball and almost killed the third baseman, right? And so he comes in, and I'm like, hey, dude, you smash that ball first and foremost, but why did you hit it over there? You know, you're supposed to be trying to hit the ball the right center field. He goes, well, he kept pounding me in. I'm like, well, what do you think he's going to do? That's what his job is. And he goes, I said, why don't you just back up off the plate? And now that pitch is something you can drive to the middle right side of the field. He goes, well, I've never thought about that. And, you know, a lot of these hitters, they don't really have that teaching to try to help them understand. And, you know, with instinctive learning, some of those kids can figure it out. But if they don't have any good instinctive learning, they need you to tell them, hey, back up off the plate. Create this pitch for yourself. What's the pitcher trying to do to you? A lot of them are going to say, I don't know. Right? But that's where that teaching moment comes in. Well, you know, me being a former catcher, I'm like, well, this is what he's trying to do to you. And this is how you should combat that so that he doesn't get you out. And a lot of them, they've never heard that.
Yes. Yeah. And it's even more evident now for us that we're seeing with these younger kids, because it feels like every single recruiting class that we get, when the freshmen get here, I tell myself every year, God bless, how good are these players? They're better than the last freshman class. And then right. They're better than they're just so much more advanced from a physical standpoint, yeah. But from a teaching standpoint, they're kind of lacking a little bit. And that's no knock on anybody. It's just, right. You know, it's just the reality of it. And, you know, the players that we're recruiting and that we get to come to campus are the best players on their high school team. They're the best players on their showcase team. And they're the best players, you know, in the area, right, where they came from. And a lot of the coaches just, they don't want to push them. It's like, oh, man, this guy's the best player. Let's just let him go play, you know, let him go do his thing.
Right.
Whereas, again, you know, we go back to these guys seeing arms on a daily basis like they've never seen before. The coaching side of things and the understanding, the instinctive learning piece comes into play like it's never come into play for them before. So, yeah. You know, A, understanding guys that are good at it already, and then B, continuing to work on those skills, whether it be the impulse control, whether it be the timing control, whether it be the instinctive learning, continuing to push on those is going to be is just so important, again, for their development moving forward to the next level.
No doubt. And those kids are coming in more with an individual type of playing mindset. And once they get to you, they look around and they're like, oh, well, there's a bunch of dudes here that can play just like me. Yep. And now it becomes this team aspect, right? And now that's where that knowledge comes into play. Hey, where are you supposed to hit the ball here? You're supposed to be looking for a pitch in this area for you to drive it to this part of the field so that we can advance. And that's the part that they don't really get in that high school and summer ball, travel ball, because they are their best player. And they are the dude typically driving the ball to create these RBIs in the run production versus, hey, you may be batting seventh now. You may be needing to move somebody over. You may need to bunt. You may need to hit and run. You may need to do some of these other things because that's what our team calls for you to do. And if you can't do that, well, guess what? You're going to be sitting next to you.
No doubt. And again, just like that next layer of, like we've talked about, you know, the understanding the strike zone piece is it just comes into play so much. We've had so many different, you know, conversations with these younger players. I mean, really a lot of our players, but more so with the younger players on, you know, hey, you know, maybe you didn't chase on a certain pitch, right? You swung at a pitch that was inside the strike zone, but it was a 2-0 count and it was a fastball that, yes, it's not going to hurt you on a chase standpoint, right? Yeah, you good. You made contact inside the strike zone, but it's not the right contact. It's not the right situation, and it's not a pitch that we can do damage. If it's before two strikes and you can't hit the ball 100 miles an hour, then we don't have to swing. There's nothing in the baseball rule book that says, nope, you have to swing. You know, a certain amount of people have to swing at the first two pitches of an at-bat. Nope, there's nothing that says that. So, you know, and you know, they've made some rules to quicken up the game. So, you know, they limit you on the timeouts and everything. But, you know, from an offensive standpoint, we want to be in the dugout and hitting on offense as long as we possibly can. Every single inning of every single game. We would rather, I mean, if we had a 5-hour game, we have a 5-hour game. We're okay with that because that's the offense that we're teaching, not to be sped up.
Yeah. Right. And Jamie, this is so fascinating. I don't know if this is going to give you any comfort, but it should. I don't think this is just to baseball, right? If we go talk to high-level college NBA basketball coaches, like this is the same thing. NFL, college football, it's the same thing. These guys have never been bigger, faster, stronger. I think Coach Ryan Pannone, Alabama basketball, on this podcast called it skill acquisition versus skill application. The skill acquisition has never been better. We've never shot more threes at a higher clip. We've never had better, more power, whatever you want to describe the output as. But the understanding and the application of that skill is still what they're coaching and the development and these guys got to get reps together. Like that's the change. And so I don't know if that gives you any comfort, but other sports are feeling it too, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. That's definitely something that we've talked about, you know, here in house and, you know, something that we're inputting when it comes to the recruiting side of things. And, you know, obviously something that we're doing our homework on when it comes to the recruiting side. So no, definitely something that I guess doesn't surprise me at the highest level. It makes me feel better though.
Okay. Let's quickly move in. Jamie, we've had you long enough, man. Appreciate you jumping in. A tremendous amount of gold nuggets in there. Last three random funny questions, sometimes both, sometimes neither. If let's start with the first one. If you weren't working in baseball, what field would you be in?
My wife's not going to agree with me on this, but I would want to be a teacher. I know that this is very similar, right? The coaching side of things is teaching, but I think I'd want to be a teacher. The reason I'm in this is because I'm extremely competitive and I love the sport of baseball, but I also want to have an impact on these kids' lives, and you can really do that with teaching. So I think teaching and probably like middle school or early high school, I think it would be right up my alley.
Man, what a holistic answer. I appreciate your service there, Jamie. Teacher Jamie. Okay, Paul and I were talking about this before we started the podcast, about pregame and postgame meals. And what was your best postgame meal and where was it at?
All right, can I change that a little bit and go pregame meal? Is that all right?
You can do whatever you want to.
Pregame meal in 2023, the year that we won it, I already gave a shout out to Gavin Dugas. I'm going to give another one. So for every home game, before every home game, we both would order a Jimmy John's sandwich, okay? But the difference is the jalapeno kicking ranch. Never was a big fan of the jalapeno ranch. He got me on it, and we literally had that every single game, every single day before a home game in 2023. Now, is that why we won the national championship? I can't say that's the exact reason, but I can't say it's not either.
I don't hear any superstitious there either.
No, none whatsoever.
Okay, last question. Just give me a couple of the best reasons for the partnership with Marucci.
Our partnership with Marucci?
Yeah.
Okay, well, man, we don't have enough time. Well, one of the biggest things is A, they're right in our backyard, which is phenomenal, right? If we ever needed anything, it's like here really, really quick. But the product is phenomenal. Our ability to go over there, we're able to test new products that are before they come out on the market and practice. Yeah. And, they care with that company. Like they care and they really, really want to be successful, especially, on the product side of things. Like, when they first started, the gloves were at a point where they were just okay. But, over the last, over the last 5 or 6 years, man, the quality of their gloves has gotten so much better. And our guys absolutely love it. And a lot of that has to do with, the fact that they care. They really want to be the best company on the market.
That's our experience as well. And Doc over there. It doesn't hurt that Doc's over there.
That doesn't hurt. He's the man. He's a legend.
He is a legend. That's Jamie Tutko. I appreciate you joining us, man. LSU Baseball's Director of Pitching Development. Thanks so much for taking the time. Man, y'all are about to, you're really about to, when this airs, you will be underway, but appreciate it. I know you're right there.
Hey, thanks, guys. I really appreciate this and, look forward to maybe doing this again someday.
Thanks for listening to the S2 Cognition Podcast. If you like the content we're putting out, please subscribe with that plus sign at the top of your app, leave a review about the episode, and share it with a few friends. You can follow us on Twitter at S2 Cognition and Instagram at S2.Cognition. If you'd like to get in touch with the program or show, please visit our website at S2Cognition.com/podcast. Thanks again for listening to the S2 Cognition Podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Hunter, signing off for now. We will talk to you soon.